Be a part of the best pro wrestling podcast today by supporting the Going In Raw Patreon. You can enjoy access to the live taping of the show, exclusive merchandise, and patron-only episodes, and so much more. Support Going In Raw today. Click the link in the description.
This is Charlotte, and you're watching Going In Raw. That sounds terrible.
What's up? This is the most must-see WWE superstar of all time and his lovely, gorgeous wife,
Marie.
And you are going in Raw.
What's up? It's your girl, Sasha Banks, the legit boss, and you are watching Going In Raw.
Oh, baby, I like it raw. Oh, baby, I like it raw. And you are tuned in to Going In Raw right now. How you doing?
Hey, Brendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
And welcome to Going In Raw, the only pro wrestling podcast you guys need to be listening to right here at youtube.com/Steven Larson, and anywhere fine podcasts are available. Be sure to hit that subscribe, notify button, and make sure you get all that good Going In Raw content every single day. Right, Larson?
Correct. Even while I'm on vacation.
That's right. Also on the Patreon at patreon.com/Steven Larson, and you can help support the show financially by the reward tiers. $5 best. $20 even better.
$200,000 best for us.
I'm so lost without you here.
Yeah, it seems that way.
I'm sitting here. I've got my Gigi Allin shirt, which just it just inherently looks like a dirty shirt because it's like cream white.
Yeah.
And it's got his ugly like Photoshop face on it. And I didn't do my hair today, so I've got poofy hair.
Oh, dear.
I'm a mess.
Yeah.
And then you're in a little hovering box next to me. That's weird.
That is strange, but you can't see me right now.
I can't see you. We're also at Pro Wrestling Tees at prowrestlingtees.com/goingin raw. We got a bunch of designs over there. Be sure to check them out. We're here to talk about 205 Live and NXT. Wait, do we have a programming note? Are there any programming notes?
Monday and Tuesday, it's probably just going to be you.
Yes.
No fun wrestling live stream on Tuesday because I will not be there.
Oh, breaking news. I'm sorry. This isn't breaking news. This is a rumor that I've been hearing that Nakamura dropping Cena on his neck might put into jeopardy Steve W's main event, Steve versus Cena this week.
Interesting.
Might have to put that off for another week.
Interesting.
Because rumor has it, his neck is really messed up. He wants to go into that. You know, that's WWE at this point is sort of his hobby. Steve W is where his heart's at. He wants to make sure that he brings it all to Steve W and make sure that the creative head honcho, Steve here, works for Steve W.
Understood.
So that might have to go. Really, I just want you to play a Cena.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't really care what the outcome of the match is.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. Anyways,
let's talk about 205 Live.
Let's see here. Oh, yeah, good. This is a good episode. This is a good episode.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the other things going on here. Oh, man, that Grand Metalik, that match was freaking awesome.
Yeah, it was.
That bit where Grand Metalik did that moonsault off the top.
Yeah.
Like, they right did the, as Tony Nese.
And then did the moonsault. That was great.
That was good. We'll get to that in a second. And, oh, the show opened up with Akira Tozawa and Neville in their recap package.
Yeah, with another well-done video package.
Yeah, it was really good.
This is a much better way to start the show as opposed to a backstage interview.
You are so against those backstage interviews.
It just starts the show off with zero energy.
Yeah, especially like, so I love Neville and everything, but like his backstage interviews, when he starts getting wandering eyes, like his eyes start to wander around. And I know he's doing it for dramatic effect and everything, but
it looks like he's disinterested.
Exactly. And that's not a good way to... I like the promos. I just think that's not a great way to kick off the show.
Yeah, it's not a good way to kick off the show at all.
Nor is Akira Tozawa on speakerphone with Titus O'Neil. I don't think that's a good way.
That's better than an interview, at least.
Yeah, but barely.
Yeah.
Like you said, good recap package. I mean, kind of telegraphed that. I mean, we kind of all knew that Akira was going over to go to SummerSlam. And I do think, actually, so before this episode, but definitely coming out of Raw, I had to assess. Because up until kind of recently, I was like, yeah, I don't see them giving that belt over to Akira Tozawa. I think with the introduction of the Titus Worldwide stuff and how well that's going over, with especially the shoulder and Daivari thing, and how well that I think has played out. I'm firmly in the, but there's nothing more for Neville to do as champion right now.
Yeah, no.
He needs to chase it. He needs to chase it to Akira Tozawa. And I think they've done a really, really good job of giving Akira Tozawa a struggle and hurdles to overcome on his way to beating Neville at SummerSlam. It seems like a really great coronation moment for him coming up. Do you agree?
Yeah, and I think Tozawa's done a heck of a job getting himself over with the crowd because coming out this week for the main event, he had the whole crowd doing his with him.
He has, you're exactly right. He's got a great connection with them. I love, yes. He did this at the beginning, but more so at the end, like after the finish. He would get in the faces of kids.
Yeah.
And do that.
Yeah.
And they were so hardcore into it. It was so much fun. I really, really enjoyed it. And you're right. It gets the crowd into it hardcore. It's great. The episode actually. So I going into this, I was like, okay, pretty sure he's going to win. And I mean, I was sure that this match was going to further validate his spot there as sort of heir apparent. If he loses at SummerSlam, I kind of feel like it's going to lose 205 Live is going to lose a little bit of steam as it pertains to the title scene. I really want to see that title on him. But the actual episode started off after that recap package with Brian Kendrick versus Jack Gallagher. I actually like this. I thought this is a good way. This is a good match to start things off. We've had some really bad promos in this story. And so finally we simply got Jack Gallagher just getting annoyed and beating the living shit out of Brian Kendrick and not caring that he was getting DQ'd in the process.
Yeah. Kendrick comes out, does promo before the match, and again calls Gallagher a clown. Gallagher comes out.
Say this though. Hold on. Wait. What? I'll say this. Sorry not to interrupt you. I did. But that the thumbnail I used last week for the video of this, of the show, with Gallagher and his clown getup, it led us to our biggest numbers on NXT show for a while, right? 205 Live NXT show for a while. So that clown thing, that I thought that I think that the got us over anyways. Saying. Yeah.
Oh. So Gallagher doesn't do a whole lot of his usual entrance stuff. He just with a great amount of focus goes to the ring, starts attacking Brian Kendrick.
Yeah.
Bell rings, Kendrick goes under the ropes. Gallagher stomps him several times. The ref gives him a 5 count, tells him to stop. He doesn't. Ref DQs Gallagher. So Kendrick wins the match.
Yeah.
But after that, Gallagher just continues to beat up Brian Kendrick more. I think he rubbed his face into the LED screen, if I remember correctly.
And then Kendrick literally, like, he goes over the barricade and he literally crawls away through the crowd, which was a great touch. He crawls away on hands and knees through the crowd. I like this. Okay, so the story has been, the execution of the story has been garbage. But
yes.
I wonder if it's sort of been intentionally garbage in order to juxtapose the silliness of Brian Kendrick's actions with what they're trying to do with Jack Gallagher, I think. And that's illustrate that he's not a clown. Because they've been playing up his, you know, when he comes out, they're like, you know, Jack Gallagher is not, you know, I mean, he's a gentleman by name and by action.
But they've brought up his MMA background.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. They've and so I think they're, you know, I mean, has the execution been great? No, it's been terrible. But and I don't think it's been terrible on purpose. I'm just thinking that I think that if their goal is to add some dimension to Jack Gallagher and give and sort of illustrate an aggressive streak or illustrate that there is an aggression within him, I think they've done a good job of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I thought that this match, I think 205 Live really benefits from, I mean, look, you know, every match should be exciting because these are really good wrestlers. However, a short match, a short show of brutality that's quick, I think really goes a long way to energize the crowd because there's something about a short match that will get you back into it. Cause it's like, whoa, that was kind of crazy.
Yeah.
And so if they can come up with interesting ways to get the crowd into it from the start, that'll go a long way toward being, I mean, you know, that crowd just saw Cena job to Nakamura in a pretty thrilling main event.
Yeah.
And so that would be no easy task, but I thought, you know, Gallagher literally stomping Kendrick's head to a DQ I thought that was a pretty effective way to sort of stun the crowd into paying attention.
Yeah.
Because they were pretty into it the rest of the time.
Yeah, they were. And it helps that there was two really good matches.
Yeah, I mean, you get, and then you got Grand Metalik doing his thing. Man, that was flipping great.
Yeah.
Next up, backstage, not the most exciting segment in the world. We had Rich Swann and Mustafa Ali playing some fun wrestling back there.
Yeah.
They were playing some 2K17.
It wasn't an exciting segment, but in terms of building character, I think it did a really good job. Because
mm-hmm.
TJP comes in, Mustafa Ali leaves, so Swann and TJP have a chance to talk, and you know, they go back and forth a little bit about their you know, friendly rivalry that's been going on,
right?
And they say, well, let's settle it next week in the ring,
right?
So that's gonna happen. But then mm-hmm. after that, after, you know, there's some tension there with the conversation, but after they decide, okay, we'll have a match next week, TJP picks up a controller and they just play video games.
Yeah.
So in one scene, we see the kind of tension between them, but at the end of the day, you know, they're still friends.
There's isn't it weird that like 205, you know, did you read that Deadspin article about how 205 Live is crap?
No.
So Deadspin, I forget who, I don't know the name of the person, but Deadspin published a piece about how WWE should never have started 205 Live. They should never have brought the cruiserweights back. It's reminiscent of when they tried to do it before. And it was a piece that I think sort of the basic premise could be argued as sound, because it's not like 205 Live is burning up the WWE network charts. But it's also one of those pieces I felt that they were trying to shoehorn evidence that wasn't there
mm-hmm.
to fit their theory, and ignoring like the good things about 205 Live. You know, they were criticizing WWE for not being able to close the deal on Zack Sabre Jr. and Kota Ibushi, who are now in the G1 as heavyweights, and things like that. But it's also the kind of thing where if they cancel 205 Live today,
mm-hmm.
in 10 years, I honestly think people would look back on it fondly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with ECW, people look back on that and they think, oh, my God, what a stinker. Like that WWE's reboot of ECW, they look back on that and it was like, oh, my, that was not good. I think they would look back onto it. And that, to me, that's kind of the litmus test. You look at it and you think, okay, well, if this went away in 5 years, people would be like, you know what? They really had something there. They just needed to tweak it a little bit.
Well, I think, especially since the start of the show was so rocky.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The strides they've made since.
Right.
You know, now week in and week out, it is, you know, at least on in terms of WWE programming, the most exciting hour of mm-hmm. WWE television.
And
Corey Graves likes to say.
And it's sort of... The writing on 205 Live is, and I honestly think it's because the program is probably so under the radar, and they are on their own island. And I mean, mm-hmm. that's one of the benefits of not having to deal with crossover on Raw. It's something that you and I both want to see, but without more crossover on Raw, I think it does allow whoever's writing 205 Live to stay on an island and book out long feuds.
I know.
And actually, nobody's messing with that.
And actually book some interesting characters with some complexity to them.
And that's the thing. Like, you, like there are no other characters on hell, on NXT, on Raw or SmackDown that are able to show off, that are able to feature the depth of character relative to WWE programming that 205 Live is able to do. And like the scene you just mentioned illustrates that absolutely perfect. The fact that they're able to use these feuds to add layers to guys like Jack Gallagher, to guys like TJP, is really kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I decided to bring that up.
Yeah.
So, next up we had... Oh, how much did you like... Do you like this Tony Nese promo?
Heck, yeah.
I thought this was great, man, because he's come a long way in a short time with his care. Like, he's going all out with the premier. It's like, okay, well, what is the premier athlete? Okay, give him a little bit of ego, and then you can totally run with it. And so making him a heel, I think, is fantastic. Counting the abs, the lighting setup that they give him.
Oh,
I think
that's
you
fantastic.
Mentioned this last
week. I
love
week. How it just highlights his musculature.
It's so great. And he spends so long in the top of the ramp, like detailing his body. That's mm-hmm. what it should be.
Yep.
And he says, and finally, who wants to count to eight? One, two, three, four. That was great. Running down people as he walks down. And that promo he gave, man, it was like a 2 minute. That was like a long promo.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he came up with it himself or if it was written for him. But either way, I thought he did really, really well with it.
Yeah, it was totally convincing.
It really was. And it was pretty lengthy.
Mm-hmm.
So hats off to Tony Nese for making pretty big strides on the promo department and just in fully realizing his character. You know, during the match and doing his promo work and up there on the ramp, I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
We got to see him versus, like I said earlier, ooh, Grand Metalik.
Yeah, really good match. A lot of fun. It's a bummer that Grand Metalik isn't on 205 Live more.
Yeah, I know. It's weird.
He was a runner-up in the Cruiserweight Classic, mm-hmm. and yet he's been on 205 Live a handful of times.
I really hope, instead of, like, reloading with more, you know, talent, that they start to pivot to add guys like Grand Metalik, maybe mm-hmm. a Lince Dorado, perhaps.
Yeah.
In, you know, bringing them in a little bit more because, man, that bit where he gave Tony Nese an Irish whip, Tony Nese went under him and slid. I think it was an Irish whip. He slid out from under the ring right as Grand Metalik just hot, like in one fluid motion.
Yeah.
I saw the GIF of this before on Twitter before I watched it. And I was just like, oh, my God. And it bugged me that the replays that they showed weren't just the A camera. They just weren't like that's what it needed to be. Because
yeah.
watching that sight and understanding it from the far away, the long shot perspective
yeah.
was fantastic. The speed with what should happen and the coordination there.
Yeah, the timing was impeccable.
It was amazing. It was fantastic. Yeah. Grand Metalik is – and it's funny because he doesn't look like the most athletic dude in the world. But man, he gets around so crisply. It's fantastic.
Yeah, he's very smooth.
Yeah, yeah, like bizarrely smooth
in the ring. And yeah. I think that's new ring gear he had. So maybe
we'll give him a push.
Yeah,
or he'll be on.
Or at
TV
least have him on the show on a regular basis.
I mean, if you remember, Tony Nese started out kind of as the guy who would job to the guys they wanted to push up more. And so maybe they're gonna have like sort of a more of a rotation, you know?
Yeah. I hope so.
That'd be nice.
Tony Nese ended up going over with his running knee in the corner,
mm-hmm.
But after a really good match.
Mm, yeah, yeah, it was really good. Next up, we had a Neville interview. This is backstage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think this is what I'm talking about, where he won this off Dasha. I don't think it was that. I don't know if it was Dasha or not.
I think it was.
I love when he says Dasha. He says that bad. Dasha. I don't care who wins this match. Because I'm going to SummerSlam and I'm going to beat them, Dasha. I'm picking up his accent a little bit more. What do they call that accent? I forget now.
Oh, I don't remember.
I forget. Damn, it's going to bug me now. It was something, Jordy?
Jordy, yeah, that sounds right.
Because I always think of Jordy LaForge. Anyway. Where am I right here? Okay, here we go.
Next.
So yeah, he gave his interview and he said essentially that, you know, SummerSlam, he said he doesn't care who wins between Akira Tozawa and Daivari. SummerSlam, he's going to win.
Yes.
Yeah.
Next, we had Arya Daivari came out to the ring for his match against Akira Tozawa, dropped a promo.
I love his promos, man.
Oh man, he's another guy who's been given a really good opportunity to really run with it.
Absolutely.
That's the thing about 205 Live, like everybody, they say, okay, we're going to give him a more prominent role. Mm-hmm. Everybody takes the opportunity and runs with it.
Absolutely. And it's only an hour of TV a week.
I know.
And look at how many different guys they've been able to organically weave into their storylines. Mm-hmm. It's impressive. So, yeah, Daivari comes out. He drops a great promo. Once again, honoring a legendary grappler from Iran.
Yep.
And he's going to prove. I like that it's less about with him. It's less about anti-American and more about Iranian pride.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it doesn't feel like the sort of Jinder Mahal or even Rusev thing. This is more about Iranian pride. He's here to make, you know, he just sort of says it in a heel manner, you know, sort of being arrogant about it. So there's an air of, you know, of arrogance. But that led into our match, Akira Tozawa versus Arya Daivari. Kind of the story I figured they'd tell. Daivari just trying to take advantage of that wrapped up shoulder.
Yeah.
And that was the you know, a big chunk of the match. Tozawa eventually able to turn it around.
Overcome the injury to pick up the win. Top rope senton.
Yeah.
He's going on to SummerSlam to face Neville.
Yeah, so that's going to be – I think that's going to be a barn burner. I really hope. And in the end, I guess it doesn't matter, but I just hope it's not going to be a pre-show match.
I know. I hope it's on the main card too.
Big Cass, I think, firmly belongs in the pre-show.
Yeah,
that's what I would think. Although it was interesting to read on the in the Observer about. I mean, this is sort of tangential 205 Live news that Vince is trying to figure out what to do with Enzo. I like at least that they recognize that the fans. I mean, say what you will about Enzo. I get kind of bored of his promos, but the fans really dig him.
Yeah, I know. He and Cass moved a lot of merch, so.
I do like that. Did you read the Observer, the newsletter?
No. I read a recap about that particular story, though.
Did you read, like, apparently what he was doing to get kicked off the bus?
No.
He was talking on his phone to somebody really loudly and apparently making disparaging remarks about the business, but about how well he's doing and who he likes to party with.
That's weird.
Hey, listen. Sin Cara, listen to me. I'm the best in this business. Everybody else is a turd sitting on a garbage can. Hey, keep it down over there. We can hear you talking about us. That Roman Reigns is an idiot. Okay, get off my bus. This is my bus. Anyways, fine. Now I've got no buses.
I know. I can't get a new bus because I got zero dimes.
I can't make any phone calls at this phone booth because I got zero dimes. He's turning into Al Pacino for me.
Yeah, kind of.
Hey, all. I got zero dimes. Anyways, let's move on to NXT.
Yeah, another solid episode of NXT.
Also known as the Aleister Black Hour. This was great.
Yeah,
this
was great. 25 minutes of the show were outstanding.
Oh man, it was
especially
fantastic.
The show opened with Johnny Gargano returning to the ring for the first time since Tommaso Ciampa turned on him at TakeOver Chicago. He faced off against Raul Mendoza. It was a really fun match.
Raul Mendoza. This was cool, man. Johnny Gargano. He came out to that DIY music and then he stopped and he looked up at the Titantron, the NXT Tron, the Full Sail Tron.
Yeah.
And they cut the video off and they put it on his new music. With
new
his new
video
package. So good for him. He'll be a welcome addition to 205 Live.
Yeah, especially if he's putting on matches that are of this quality.
Yeah, can you imagine a match between him and Chad Gable?
Oh,
I don't
man.
Want Chad Gable down in 205 Live, mind you, but I would
phenomenal.
Like to see that. That'd be great. Yeah.
That would be great.
Anyways, Gargano looked really good here. Raul Mendoza got some stuff in, but Gargano ended up going over with a crossface.
Yeah. Fun match. A lot of fun.
Next up, here's the first example of NXT audio issues because I felt like the audio there was fine. And I forget now that I think it was a Sonya Deville match. But there was a cut-in with Moro.
Oh, every time you get to do voiceover and post,
yeah,
it's so obvious.
It is so obvious. And I would love to think that it's just Moro with his home setup.
Probably.
I mean, he does a pretty good job of emulating his cadence for
the
show
it's
itself.
Yeah, just the recording setup is so different. It's hard to match the quality of audio.
And on top of that, it's just louder.
Yeah.
Like, they just need to, honestly, if they bump the levels down a bit on it, or at least put on some, like, you know, noise-canceling headphones and, like, monitor the levels a bit harder, like, I feel like maybe I won't notice as much, but man, it went from, oh, look at that. And now we're going to blah, 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 blah. And I was like, whoa. Anyways, Paul Ellering and the Authors of Pain had a pre-film segment promo. And Paul Ellering was, to me, he was talking in a whisper.
Yeah, I could barely hear it.
The audio levels were so low. Like, it sounded fine. And then I was like, man, where's the remote to the TV? And I'm like, I don't know where it is. And Bam is all talking to me. And I'm like, damn it. What's he saying? But I can't imagine. I heard him say something like, Sanity.
Yeah, they confirmed the match between Authors of Pain and Sanity at TakeOver.
Sanity, you and the Authors of Pain.
So I think that was
going
the meat
to take
of the
over,
promo.
And we're going to fight because I have the algorithm for pain at TakeOver. I'm like, what are you saying, man?
I think that was pretty much it.
Yeah. Next up, Asuka's music played and Asuka came out in her business suit. And she dropped a promo saying that she's going to beat up Ember Moon at SummerSlam. She was healing up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Ember Moon comes out in some cozy-looking jeans.
One of her shirts.
She drops a promo, man. These promos of Ember Moon's, man. I just feel like they're dropping the ball with her. She just sounds like remember when we went to AR? Remember when there was like the theater people, like doing their monologues, their soliloquies. It comes off like theater. It sounds like bad theater acting. That's what it comes off to me. I don't find it convincing in the least. And I don't
at
know
least
what they...
I appreciated her intensity because there was intensity behind what she was saying.
Yeah, I know. I know. I think it's...
I found the intensity believable.
I don't know.
Anyways, after the promos, they brawl. Asuka thinks she has the upper hand. And then
Asuka sucker punched her.
Yeah,
Asuka slapped the shit out of her, and then Ember Moon came back and slapped the shit out of Asuka.
Yeah, and they fought a bit, and then Asuka thought she had the upper hand, and Ember Moon hit her with an eclipse.
I almost feel like so. Here's the thing: like when Ember Moon, there was that time when Ember Moon, like she was like mysterious, but then she showed up on a pre-show and she acted like the girl next door, and I thought when she's just being herself, she's very appealing. She's got charm. When she's trying to act angry, like if there's like, usually I'm not a fan of like the arrogant smiling baby face unless you've done something to prove it. And I think she has. So I think she can be like too cool for school and kind of arrogant as a baby face. And I think that's better than her trying to be intense. I don't know. That's just, I'm trying to figure it out because I really like her in-ring work and I think she has a great look.
Yeah.
I just, whenever she opens her, whenever they try to demonstrate who she is via like, you know, words, it just, man, it just does not come off to me. I don't know what it is. And I want to like her.
Yeah.
Anyways, I don't see her. Do you see her pulling off this win at TakeOver?
I mean, I think everything's in place for her to do it. I don't know if she will though.
It kind of depends on if they want to keep on, because I do believe, and I think you're with me on this, I think they thought for a time that she would be a great heir apparent. I think that her injury, and maybe they're aware that the promo stuff hasn't been great. I would say it's like a 50-50 shot.
Yeah.
It's a matter of, do they just want to move on with this or give Asuka something else to do? Or move Asuka on to main. I think that'd be wasting a huge, you know, potential for Asuka to just vacate the title. I think that'd be much more powerful with her going to main. I think that's more important, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But anyways, so yeah, they're going to fight a TakeOver.
Yeah, it'll next be a good match.
Yeah, it'll be good. I hope they give it more than like 9 minutes. Bobby Roode gave an interview. He gave like a sit-down interview. These always crack me up because they're supposed to be like, I don't know, they're supposed to be kind of shoot-ish,
yeah.
You know? Like, he sits down and he's like, you know, in character, but they're putting the little lav mic on him, and he's like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, he's acting annoyed. They have to deal with the production process.
Aspect of things,
yeah.
Exactly. And then, like, the camera sort of adjusts itself. Like, the cameraman sort of adjusts the camera a little bit, goes out of focus and in focus, and I'm like, why would you be doing that during one of his sentences? And they're asking about Bob. They're asking about Bob. This. What do you think about this? I dig this. That they're still doing this Roderick Strong thing through the Drew McIntyre thing.
Yeah, I know. I mean, the way this segment played out, I would not be at all surprised if Roderick Strong got involved in the main event. Not in terms of being a participant.
Yeah.
But going out there and trying to exact some measure of revenge against Bobby Roode.
Yeah, maybe. I think you're probably right. On the other hand, I would be kind of surprised. We don't get a lot of wonky finishes with TakeOvers.
I know.
Usually they're straight up, which I really appreciate. And I think the fans of the TakeOver stuff really appreciate that. So I could see that maybe being the case like now more than I've seen before, just because they moved on to a different feud before they finished up with this feud.
Yeah.
And the Drew McIntyre thing isn't even a feud. We saw a promo from Drew McIntyre.
Yeah, he just won a match, be number one contender, dropped one promo, and that's pretty much it so far. We still have 2 weeks, but
I mean, is this a case where, you know, Drew, that they want to get the belt on Drew without making Bobby look bad, so they're going to do a wonky finish.
Well, they could have a bit where Roderick Strong you know, attacks Bobby Roode backstage before the match or something. Mm-hmm. So Roode comes out and he's not 100%.
I think no matter what, you're killing a great, I mean, you're killing a, you know, Drew McIntyre if you do that, though.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? Like, what, Drew's going to pick up a wonky victory? And it's like, yeah, it keeps Bobby looking strong, but man, you want Drew to be annihilated.
Drew's
going to
be the champ. You want him to look strong, yeah. Well, also, you don't want your champion, especially as a face champ, to look weak.
Right, yeah, exactly. But especially a guy like Drew, you know?
I know.
Like, man, he's, like, supposed to be a big, powerful man.
Yeah.
And it's still very curious to see where they're going with Aleister Black. We'll talk about him in a second, but
yeah,
so many alpha males, you know?
I know.
Let's see here. Then we had, oh yeah, so anyways, Bobby Roode's interview, he basically talks crap about Roderick Strong, then Roderick Strong attacks him right as Bobby Roode is saying, I'm out of here, this interview's crap. He leaves, or he starts to leave, and Bobby Roode, I'm sorry, Roderick Strong comes in and attacks, or tries to attack. He's kept away from Bobby Roode by some developmental guys.
Yeah. And then he goes to Regal.
Yeah.
And Strong says, I want Bobby Roode. And Regal pretty much says, take over a match, a set, can't do anything for you.
Yeah. Well, he says, he criticized my family. What kind of man would I be if I didn't try to respond? Roderick Strong is so cheesy, but I like, this is how you should book him, because I'm on his side. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm with this, but he's so damn cheesy. It's great. Talk about cheese. We're going to get to a guy who's like super duper cheesy in a little bit here.
But yeah, that was, I thought the same thing.
Okay, good. I'm glad we're on the same boat. But he said, and then Regal said, I know, man, but act professional. Come on, man. I love when proper British guys say, man.
Yeah.
Get a hold of yourself, man. Be professional. Asuka. Anyways, next up, we have another Street Profits video package. I can't get enough of these. I honestly just don't even want to see them wrestle. I just want to see their Snapchat accounts on TV.
I know. It's been great so far.
I know. It's going to be good. I like these guys. Next up, we had Sonya Deville versus Big Charlotte. This girl looked exactly like Charlotte. What the
she
F?
Looked a bit like her, yeah.
It's, dude, it was exact, like, she was in there, and when she scowled, I was like, this is literally Charlotte. Just a big Charlotte. It was like a Haas Charlotte. Holy moly. I love Sonya Deville, though, man.
Yeah, she's her character work's been pretty good since they repackaged her.
She gives it her all. I wonder if she should tone it down just a tad.
I don't know, because when she did that transition into the triangle, when she won, that was so fast.
Yeah, it was cool. Oh, impressive. I'm not talking about toning that down. Nah, she don't need to tone anything down. She's very, really intense, though. It's kind of intense.
Yeah, she manages to be super intense without being cheesy.
Yeah, exactly. I just don't want her to start straying into cheesy territory like we got a little bit later.
Yeah.
I'm glad. Oh, man, this is going to be funny. Anyways, so backstage, this was great. Backstage, no, I don't think this was Dasha. This was not Dasha. It was the other one. Or one of the other ones. There's Dasha. There's the blonde girl whose name I think is what? Christy?
Something like that.
And then there's another brunette. The one who always gets dissed by the Velveteen Dream.
Yeah.
Oh, man. He's great. Anyway, she's interviewing Hideo Itami. And she's, saying, what's up with you and your friend Cassius Ohno? You keep attacking him. What's the deal with that? Hideo Itami grabs the mic, or he starts talking in Japanese, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He starts talking about that he's not getting his respect, and he starts talking in Japanese, then he grabs, and then the interviewer says, oh, we have to go to the ring, something's going on, and he, in frustration, grabs the mic and starts walking out towards the ring.
I love it, because and never has there been an interview stopped in that manner, like legitimately, when they've gone back to the ring, because then you go back to the ring, and people are literally just milling about.
Yeah.
And so Hideo Itami comes down. No. Wait. He grabbed the mic, and then...
And then he walks out to the ring, and he's in the ring, and he starts speaking in Japanese.
Right. And then Aleister Black's music hits.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Aleister Black comes to the ring. They kind of have a stare down. Hideo Itami says, all right, I'll leave.
Yeah.
And he starts to leave, and Aleister Black's looking over his shoulder.
Because his back is facing Itami, but he's looking over his shoulder, keeping an eye on him.
And Itami's about to go through the ropes, stops.
Full sprints at Aleister Black, and he gets dropped by an amazing black mass.
Yeah, the timing on that was really impressive.
It was, because, dude, somebody's running at you like full on. And yeah. he drops a black mass and connects perfectly and sits down as Itami falls like a sack mm-hmm. of potatoes. It was mm-hmm. the crowd pop. It was amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Fantastic. God damn it. They are booking Aleister Black like a beast. Perfectly. Absolutely perfect. He is so good, man. So then we get the second half of Redragon.
Yeah.
Kyle O'Reilly
made his NXT debut.
Boy. This is a good match.
It was a really good match. I really like Kyle O'Reilly's wrestling style.
Yeah, me too.
Because he does a really good job of incorporating his MMA background into how he wrestles, and it's believable, and it actually looks like it really hurts.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But some of his like posing and stuff,
dude,
is a little bit too much.
It looked like his face looks like something out of Gary's Mod. Like when he's walking down the ramp and he's like, like you can't see my face right now, but it's all over the map. It's like Jim Carrey in The Mask.
Yeah.
And it's so overdone.
Yeah.
It's super cheeseball.
I don't remember him doing that. I mean, granted, I've only seen like one of his matches when he had his title defense against Adam Cole at Wrestle Kingdom, but I remember him being that over the top.
I'm in the same boat as you. I haven't seen a lot of Kyle O'Reilly matches. I did really like this match. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, the match was really good.
Yeah. But I don't remember him being like that either. Maybe he was just, you know, hey, it's I'm here in NXT. I want to make a big impact. But man, it was just way. And then he gets up on like when he comes to the ring, gets up on the like the middle rope and or in the corner there and starts like doing weird arm movements.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is way too much, man.
Yeah.
Like give me Bobby Fish. Anyways, the match was really, really good.
Yeah.
It was, like you said earlier, it was a really, like, Kyle O'Reilly, and especially with these two guys, a lot of sort of striking going on, some cool submission shit. There was a couple of really cool sort of, like, whoa moments where, like, Aleister Black tried to do the thing where he goes and
throw the moonsault into somebody, and then Kyle O'Reilly kicks him right, he's about to jump off the ropes.
Right, exactly, which is like a super scary thing to look at.
And then Kyle O'Reilly, when Aleister Black tried to lift his head up for the black mass, grabbed his foot and mm-hmm. put it right into an ankle lock.
Yeah, they just started kicking
each other. There was a couple
really
cool spots where Kyle O'Reilly was reversing moves on Aleister Black that we hadn't seen yet.
Right, and then eventually he caught him off guard with the black mass out of nowhere.
Well, Kyle O'Reilly early in the match did an axe kick followed by an elbow,
mm-hmm.
which Aleister Black kicked out of. So he tried it again. He hit the axe kick and really ran towards him for the elbow.
Yeah,
that's when Aleister hit him with the black mass.
Oh, it was
got the win.
It just dropped.
Yep.
I love my favorite thing that Aleister Black does. One of many favorite things is when he like. Kill somebody, like he gets him down, not for like a finish, but and he sits down with them, and then he just stares at their face as they're sort of writhing around.
Yeah,
and the intensity is there. He reminds me. Have I made the Zod comparison? I think I made the Zod comparison. He should have played Zod.
Yeah, that'd been good.
He's got such a Zod look to him. He's so great, and they're booking him perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, he goes over. I watched, like, an NXT sort of Fallout video, like a post-show interview with Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah.
I advise you watch it because it's so corny. It's the Christy, I think, the blonde.
Mm-hmm.
Kimmy, Christy, I don't know. And she's interviewing him, and she says, "How you know, looking forward, what's been your, you know, what can people expect from you in NXT? And he's like, you know, everybody here has been really nice, but then they look over their shoulder, or I look over my shoulder, and they have no idea how far I'm raising the bar of competition here in NXT.
You've had one match.
And I'm like, you just got your ass kicked. And granted, it was a very good competitive match, but I don't know. It was... He looks like a guy who's trying too hard. Like, you're doing too much.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Like, and he's got a face that just makes me want to say, dude, you just bring it down, okay? I know I get it. You're intense. You look like you're 12, though. Come on, get out of here. But you know, if he talks less and he keeps on putting those kind of matches, then I'm all in on him.
Yep.
I'd
get over with the crowd. He'll get over with Steve.
I'd rather see him Redragon. Because yeah. Bobby Fish is sort of a character. He's a good, he's a sort of a lighthearted, good character.
Yeah, he's a good balance.
And I think that he needs that balance. So I might go back and watch some of their stuff to get like promo stuff together to see like where they found like sort of the middle ground there. I mean, a lot of people love Redragon, To Dragon Again. And yes, you don't have to put it in the comments. We understand that it's Red Dragon.
Yes.
We enjoy calling them Redragon here on Going in Raw because we can do that. It's our show.
Yes. Let's go right to questions because the first question has to do with Dragoning Again.
Okay.
From the Discord Club designer, Manuel GDP.
Mm-hmm.
His question is, when can we expect To Dragon Again? After TakeOver.
Yeah.
For sure by the Dusty Classic.
Okay, so the Dusty Classic is in January?
November.
November, okay. Well, certainly by then.
I think November. Yeah, I think November.
Certainly by then. That'll be really cool.
Well, maybe it is January. Whatever, it's towards the end of the year. Beginning of next year.
Fat Bastard Chimp, Alex Foster, says, with Rollins, Uso, and Gargano basically adding lyrics to their music, burn it down!
Ugh.
He says, who's next? He says, I met Braun, same music, but lyrics from Limp Bizkit. I don't know what that
no,
means.
No, please. Not that.
Yeah, no, no good.
I think Roman Reigns should have lyrics to his song. This is Roman Reigns. Yeah. It's his yard.
When that there was that YouTube video where somebody did that, it was hilarious.
Oh yeah,
and it was stuck in my head for the longest time. And it was exactly that. This is Roman, but it wasn't like this is my yard. I don't know. It was before he started saying that. CM Punk finds it insulting. Is it just me or does Ember Moon feel like someone that'll get to the main roster and get lost in the shuffle? Not if they figure out who she is before then.
And also, I think her finisher is so awesome and so unique that. She's not gonna get lost. Just based
she's
on that
too
alone.
Good to get lost. I really,
yeah,
do.
She's really too good in the ring. Yeah.
I honestly think she'll be an injection of energy. If she went to main roster right now, I think she'd be a healthy injection of energy to either roster. I think she would shake things up quite a bit. I don't think so. I think she'll be good. I think she'll be fine.
Yeah, I think she'll be good too.
It's just when you're in there against Asuka, I'm trying to find ways to get me to believe that she can be an heir apparent, and I just feel like they're fumbling like her. I just feel like they're fumbling with her character right now. Let's see here.
Pretty Boy Adam Mayhem.
Yeah.
Is Deep V from W Steve W Adam Mayhem from Fun Wrestling, or are they two different people? The same person. Don't believe Steve.
No, I don't know. How do you know that? You're a spectator.
It's the same person. I think, don't they have the same tattoo on their left arm?
What is that? People can get tattoos all the time. I have a tattoo on my left arm. What does that mean?
It's the same person.
I don't think, like, legally... Adam Mayhem, I think, is contractually bound to Fun Wrestling, so I don't
exactly.
think...
Exactly, so I have
so it wouldn't make sense that it's the same
a lawsuit
person, though.
Against W. Steve W. Anyway.
Really wouldn't make sense. Let's see here. The Ron Adams. Who do you fear getting underutilized on Main more? Aleister Black or Asuka?
I don't think either of them are going to be underutilized.
I don't believe either of them will either. Let me ask you something. Looking at the Raw roster right now, I see Samoa Joe as potentially a roadmap for Aleister Black.
Mm-hmm.
I could kind of see that.
Yeah.
I could see that. They just need to keep on doing what they're doing. I hope that he tickles everybody's fancy backstage. You know what I mean? I hope that Vince looks at him and says, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Next.
Satisfying Larson Chop. Hey, friendos, after that fantastic showing of Aleister last night, he has two questions. Do you think he'll become NXT champion in the next year before he's drafted to Maine? And two, who will he take his first loss to? Thanks.
I think yes. I think it's going to be one of these things that, number one, I could see him getting drafted to Maine after Mania. I could see him showing up in the post-Mania Raw.
Regardless if he wins the belt or not.
Yeah. However, I think once this Drew Bobby Roderick situation is settled down, he's going to emerge as the new number one contender.
Yep.
And I think it's going to be fantastic.
I have a feeling that, you know, he's without a doubt ready for Maine. Mm-hmm. But I think once Bobby and especially Bobby goes up to Maine,
mm-hmm.
Aleister is going to be the guy that's going to carry NXT for a while.
Maybe
he's
for
gonna
a while.
The new Finn, the new Nakamura. He's going to fill that role, I think, for a little bit.
That could be. I mean, yeah, Mania might be too soon. It might be, you know, next year's like a year from now or even,
yeah.
you know, Mania 35.
Yeah.
What are we coming up on? We're coming on Mania 34?
Correct.
Okay. Let's see here. Nate Morris asks, my question about Cedric Alexander. Do you think he would have been better off if they put him in NXT? And if so, do you think he would have won the title and be better off on the main roster than he is now? I'm going to say no, because they have too many alphas in NXT. I don't think there's really a lot of room. I know he would have been a little bit further back, but I think he's doing fine on 205 Live. He had that injury that he had to, you know, get past. He would have been further along at this point.
Yeah. Nicholas Grosskirth. I've noticed a lot of New Japan Pro Wrestling references by Moro last night. Do you think they are WWE approved, or does Moro just not give an F?
Oh, we forgot about it. Yeah, we forgot to mention that. He was Okada Tanahashi. Ghoul.
Yeah. And he was talking. He mentioned both Ring of Honor and at least, you know, Kyle O'Reilly's work in Japan when talking about
him. I think Michael Cole is like the man there in NXT. I mean, him obviously in Triple H, but something tells me that the commentary aspect of things is probably especially something that Michael Cole has his hands on, and it wouldn't surprise me. It is very interesting to me that Michael Cole, number one, is so heavily involved in NXT.
Yeah.
But number two, I like that he seems that the commentary team on NXT are allowed a bit more leeway to appeal to the crowd that NXT should be appealing to.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, they're meant to be kind of like a WWE's Ring of Honor. That's sort of the purpose.
Yes.
So they need to be a bit, you know, more well-versed, you know, vocally.
And acknowledge.
Yeah, acknowledge, exactly.
Other promotions, especially when a lot of their talents are coming straight from either New Japan or Ring of Honor. You have to acknowledge.
Exactly. Here's a good question.
Their previous wrestling history, yes.
So you guys, from Tommy T, you guys blame creative a lot, which I agree with sometimes, but it also is the superstar's fault a lot when things go wrong. So what are three times you can think of when it was a superstar's fault for a segment being bad, not the creative teams? He says the biggest one he can think of is almost all of gender segments. So Tommy T's not a fan of gender, which is fine. Can you think of some segments where you were like, you know what, he or she really just, you know, didn't help things at all?
I mean, I know they exist. I'm just trying to think.
Yeah. I mean, I think those early Roman Reigns solo promos were like allegedly written by Vince, so you can't really blame Roman for that.
Yeah.
You can blame LeVar Ball for his segment. he was talent for that night. And apparently he went way off script.
Yeah, that's a good point, Steve.
You can kind of blame LeVar Ball for that one.
Yes, true.
But I don't know. Give me some wrestlers. I'm trying to think of some.
I'll throw this out there.
Okay.
That period with Seth Rollins after his face turned, but before Triple H really was back on television on a regular basis.
Yeah.
There were some nights that felt like that either he wasn't connecting with the material he was getting, even though it wasn't bad.
Yeah.
Or he just wasn't into it.
Yeah.
That some of his promo work wasn't necessarily bad, but wasn't as effective as it probably could have been.
I'll say this, too. So I think that's a good example. I think John Cena has obviously a lot of stroke.
Yeah.
And when he comes out for that last AJ feud and doesn't really acknowledge that AJ had a clean win or two on him.
Yeah.
And treated him like it was kind of a fresh thing. I'm going to put that on Cena, because Cena's the kind of guy who can say, hold on a second. We can acknowledge that AJ, I mean, and Cena has said in the past, like on TMZ videos or whatever, that he just does what he's told. But we know that's not the case.
Yeah.
He could have been the one to have said, no, let's do something. You know, we need to at least acknowledge that AJ beat me before.
Yes.
We need to acknowledge, you know, these things. I can't just go on the Today Show and say that guy from Atlanta.
Yeah.
Like, that was booty. And I put that squarely on Cena. Kind of the same thing. And, I mean, it's a very Cena thing to go out there and be very, like, too pro-American. But, to, you know, I imagine he could have vetoed the line, "When the towers fell, the flag stood tall." He could have vetoed that line and realized that it was tacky. But, you know, he went with it. So there's an example for you.
Yeah. All right. Herney Fernie. Other than Adam Cole, baby, who else would be a huge signing for NXT?
Who'd be the biggest signing for NXT? Well, obviously, it'd
Let's say possible free agency.
Possible for that's a different story. Yeah.
So people that we think or have an idea that might be a free agent within the next 6 to 8 months.
Okay.
I mean, topping that list would be Kenny Omega because his contract runs out in February, I think.
Yeah. Let's look at, I mean, but he's sort of like a main roster guy.
Yeah.
I would say for NXT, I would say two names come to mind, although I would not really, I probably wouldn't want to see it. Zack Sabre Jr. and Kota Ibushi.
Ricochet. Sort of,
Ricochet. Absolutely Ricochet.
So, yeah, when Lucha Underground stops airing, mm-hmm. I think sometime next month, 90 days after that, so the end of the year.
Yep. There you go. Ricochet. He's the man. He is the man.
He is the man. God, he's awesome.
He looks like a superhero. So good.
Brennan Hardy. If NXT got a second hour and added a mid-card title, would become your guy's favorite WWE product. With all the talent coming in and there already, it would easily surpass everything that is going on. I mean, it's already Steve's favorite WWE product right now.
It's already my favorite. And that mid-card title, whatever it is, would become my favorite title in all of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I was watching, I started to watch Kenny Omega versus Elgin.
Oh, yeah.
And just when Kenny comes out with that title, holy crap, it's huge and immaculate.
And amazing.
It's amazing. That's the perfect word for it. Roppongi.
One more question.
Roppongi Knights. Are you guys going to the NXT show in San Jose on the 11th in August? And if you are we having a friendo meetup? Nope.
We are not. We're going to the show the next day in Sacramento.
Correctamundo. Why go out to San Jose when we have it in our backyard?
Correct.
Absolutely. All right. Well, you go enjoy your vacation.
I will.
I need your login info for all YouTube stuff in case you die and I need to change it over to my bank account.
True. None of that is true.
Anyways, that's it for now. Dirt Sheet is back. Larson's literally here. We did actually shoot it yesterday, so we're good with that.
Yeah, it's done. It's already it's done.
It's real. I mean, honestly, you guys aren't going to feel anything till like Monday. I got to figure out what I'm going to do for the Monday show.
Yeah.
I'm going to do something fun, though. Anyways, thanks for tuning in. Until next time, talk to you guys later.
Bye.